We're here today on Crew Call with Guy Nativ, the director of the new Helen Mirren drama, Golda, about the Iron Lady of Israel, Golda Meir. Welcome, Guy.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
With Golda, I get the sense that this is like a Godfather film for you in your career, that there was an immense amount of challenges in putting it together and a gratification finally seeing it released. Can you tell us about how everything came together here, how you got Nicholas Martin's script, how long have you been wanting to make a film about Golda Meir?
It was an open assignment for directors. It was even before Skin, 2018, I think. I read Nicholas Martin's script. It was completely different script than what we have now as a movie. It was more of a large, kind of a war movie in a way. And Golda was just a small part of it. And I came in and I said, listen, I love the approach, but I do need to get in there and do my authentic writing here with Nicholas and to bring authenticity. And also, I think we should focus more on Golda. For me, it's like Golda's Requiem in a way, than just watch another war movie, you know? That was my approach. And they were keen to hear my pitch. I did my pitch. I told them that I want to go under her skin to understand, to have her basically isolated, lonely, and sick. And to bring this to the script means that we have to sit down and just do a whole new version. And Nicholas was open to it. So was the producer. And, you know, we just worked on that. And when I arrived, Helen was already attached to the project. So basically, it was her grandson that thought that Helen Mirren could play his grandmother. He just saw his grandmother in Helen Mirren. So I guess he told the producers that, and they act accordingly. So she was attached, and I was really happy to meet her. And that's how we started to see if we are on the same page, if Helen agrees to the way I took the film, because it's not your typical biopic from birth to death. It's not this canvas. It's something more specific, more, magnifying glass into a specific, time in her life.
So was the financing all together for the movie, but by the time that you had arrived?
No, actually it was, I think the financing was there, but then the pandemic happened and reshuffled everything. And then Helen just told us, listen, I'm still attached and I'm still there. If you need to, you know, if you need to bring the budget back. And that's where the amazing Bleecker Street and Embankment came on board. And said, "We love the script. We love how this, the way this film is going." And they just, you know, made it happen.
So let's give us a little history lesson. So Golda Meir is the only woman to serve as the Prime Minister of Israel, and she was chosen for the job just before the 1969 elections, following the death of Levi Eshkol, and ended her job in 1974. And until 1974, she was the only woman to serve as a member of any cabinet. But tell us more. What does she mean to the Israeli people? And why does it boggle the mind that she's still the only woman that was ever elected to the top spot?
So, Anthony, you have to understand, this is not just for Israel. This is the one female leader the world had at that era, right? In the 70s or in the modern era. I think she paved the way to other female leaders like her, like Margaret Thatcher and then Angela Merkel and more. But she was by the way, she didn't want to be a prime minister. She was just like thrown there. You know, she was just, it's because the Labour Party did not know who to choose. They were fighting between themselves. And, you know, no one agreed on any one candidate. I know Dayan wanted to be prime minister. Thank God he wasn't. And they said, you know what, let her be the prime minister until we figure out who's the right person. That's how it went down. So basically she was like, I don't want to be prime minister. I'm a great, you know, foreign affair minister. I mean, it's like, I'm great in what I'm doing. Why me? And they said, you know what, just be prime minister for a year or two, and then we'll elect a new one. So she found herself in a position that she didn't want to be in, because most prime ministers are chasing this role, you know? And she was like kind of a band-aid until they find someone else. But she found herself, she was kind of the wrong person in the wrong time in the wrong place, because she found herself in the most horrific war in the history of our country, the Vietnam of Israel, right? And then she became the scapegoat, because everybody blamed it was easy to blame the woman, the older woman in the room, right? All those misogyny commanders. So, you know, it's very, very complicated situation. She made history without even wanting to make history. She wasn't, and then she was, used as the face of the failure. And when the protocols start to come out, the uncensored documents start to come out 10 years ago from the war room, from the meetings, from the government meetings, from all the stuff that were high classified, like classified top secret, we understood that the narrative was not that she was to blame, but it was much more complicated than that. She relied on her dysfunctional commanders that proved that did a lot of wrong stuff. That almost brought us to a total devastation.
And knowing that, that was always the way in with this movie. It was always the Yom Kippur War.
So the script before I came was around Yom Kippur War. Yeah, the 10 days of the war. It was never like a biopic, like, you know, like The Crown, right? Because it's in order to make a biopic on Golda, you need like 5 hours. Or more. So the film, as like the queen, concentrate on a specific moment in her life. I could call it the requiem for a leader, you know, because her dying is our country dying, basically. She's killing herself mentally and physically while the country is dysfunctional, the command room is dysfunctional, and the smoke in their eyes is basically the smoke of war, the tug of war. So yeah, it's a very specific time. And when Helen came to my house in the middle of the pandemic, we sat for 4 hours and we agreed that we want to get under her skin, her very dry and dead skin, that similar to the desert, that the Sinai desert.
Why do you think there hadn't been a biopic of her before?
You know, it's a great question, Anthony. I think that, you know, it takes few generations to digest the trauma. I think that like JFK, you know, when you see the first Oliver Stone movie, JFK, it happened like 40 years after what happened, right? And I think that's a similar kind of thing that the generation of my dad, who fought the war, couldn't really cope. It was an open wound that, you know, we lost like 200 and 700 soldiers, and we were a small country. We were like a kind of Ukraine in a way. So it's almost like the US losing 150,000 soldiers in a war. It was devastating.
Speaking of your father, you were with him around Tel Aviv, right? In the protests.
I went with my dad to a protest that we call the Yom Kippur of Democracy. We are fighting for the future of this country that is in great danger because of the Benjamin Netanyahu regime that I call extreme and dangerous, that want to decimate the high court and the judicial system in order to save himself from a trial, and make Israel like Poland, Hungary, Turkey, and Russia. And this is something my generation and my father generation, who fought the war, who wore T-shirts that said, "I am a 73-year-old. I'm from the 73 generation. I'm fighting again for the Yom Kippur of democracy." We will not let that happen. And I hope that the judicial system will block Bibi and his crazy ideas. And also the extremism of religious people in Israel right now. You know, like 2 days ago, there were two ladies that tried to get on the bus, and the driver told them, "You are not allowed to go. It's only for men." It's almost like Iran, you know. It's like this country is really became so extreme. So we all feel this is the Yom Kippur War, and not because of our enemies around us, but because we are doing it to ourselves in a way. So yeah, a lot of people feel that this movie is almost like a full circle, that they feel that it's like Yom Kippur all over again, when the commanders were blind, like Benjamin Netanyahu and his people are blind to what's going on. And to all the army man who says, "Hey, we're not going to serve the army if that's the case. We're not serving a king. We're serving a kingdom."
You know, when it comes to movies that have Israeli subject matters, you know, I think of Steven Spielberg's Munich. That was also met.
Love this movie.
I love it too.
Great movie.
I think it's phenomenal. At the time of release, it was also met with division and controversy from what you would think would be its core audience. That said, let's start with, were you surprised when a big deal was made in the media over Helen Mirren playing Golda? Because I mean, looks wise, she's like a dead ringer for her. Like, it just seemed, I'm just curious, were you shocked at the extreme pushback over that? Were you expecting that?
I'm Jewish. I'm Israeli. Both of my grandparents are Holocaust survivors. There's no one more sensitive than me when somebody is portraying a Jew in the wrong way. But, and it's a big but, Helen Mirren portrayed Golda in a brilliant way. She is Golda. She has the neshama, we call it neshama. She has the Golda's soul. She has a Jewish soul. She was 29 when she went to the kibbutz, picked tomatoes in 1967, and toured the country from north to south. She slept on the beach in Elat. She is like, you know, she has Israel in her DNA. And she felt to me like she's a family member, like she's my mother, you know? Like I'm speaking to my mother. So I understand when it's the wrong person to portray such a character, but Helen Mirren was so right. And again, I was told, and I spoke to Golda's grandchildren, who told me, "Listen, from all the people in the world, we feel that Helen is our grandmother. She has the compassion, she has the humor, she has the intelligence, she has this kind of a very confident gravitas to her." And you know what? She brought us to the role. She brought this humor, she brought this kind of like, she was her in a way.
So from the Berlin, from the film playing at Berlin and at the Jerusalem Film Festival and in early screenings here in LA, what struck you about the turnout?
We screened it in front of 6,000 people in Jerusalem, and I had people in tears, people that are war veterans, people, everybody in Israel, every single person has some kind of correlation to the Yom Kippur War. Either a neighbor, either a brother or sister or father, they all were very touched. And the new narrative that kind of like cleaning Golda from not all the wrongdoings, but from some of them, and not only putting her as a scapegoat. I think that a lot of people felt is the right move, especially in Israel. And I think that if you talk about American Jews, they also felt the same, because Golda, you have to understand, in 1974, she was on the front of a Newsweek, the Israeli Newsweek, her face in a very unflattering photo close-up, and a giant slogan, a giant like headline saying the debacle. She took the blame. She took all the bullets. And she said, it's on me. And she resigned, by the way. Show me a leader that will resign today because of a war that did not go well. Later on, we understood that the intelligence division fucked it up. And, you know, there were so many fuck ups around Golda. So her name was cleaned a little bit, and we showed her as human. And you have to say, until now, people saw her on a 50 shekel bill, on a school name, on a statue, but not more than that.
When does the movie open in Israel?
Same day as here, 25th.
When does it? Who's handling it?
United King.
And what's your anticipation? Is it, well, first of all, was it released? Was it met with any kind of pushback by censory boards or anything like that? Or was
it in Israel?
Yeah.
No, not at all. I mean, look, everything is out there already, Anthony. Everything is like all the protocols, the Agronaut committee, the secrets, the lies, everything is out there. So no one is like, oh my God, you know, no one is surprised. But I think there's a lot of, here's the thing. I think that we miss people like Shimon Peres, like Menachem Begin, like Rabin, we miss people with integrity, humble people that cared about the country more than themselves. But now what you see now is totally, you know, corrupt. So we kind of, when people see Golda, they miss the old time Israel, the classic leaders that built this country.
Tell us about Harmonia. Is there a chance you're still going to go with that when the strikes are lifted? Like, I heard that you had a cast together, but it's not, you know, is it, do you think the project is a go project after the strikes let up?
Yeah, unless they told you something that I don't know.
Are you allowed to tell us who's in the cast?
No, I'm not allowed. I'm very, very excited about this cast. It's a dream to work with these people, with these women, because it's all women. You know, it's like my mother, my aunt, the cult leader, and my grandmother. So it's like assemble of four amazing, powerful women. This is my most personal story. You know, my grandmother was in a cult, in a female cult, and she joined it after, you know, she's a Holocaust survivor, and she joined the cult after those, like in the 80s when she was 50, she had those post-trauma depressions from the Holocaust, and this woman just made her happy, but also took her money, and she divorced my grandfather, and she left us, and she gave her all the reparation money from Germany. And she brought her to Virginia in the middle of nowhere in a place called Yogaville, which is in Buckingham County. And she bought a plantation, and she was like kind of the queen, and all these 37 women around her in a place that you don't have even a cell reception. It was in the 80s, and my grandmother was her right hand, her geisha, her lover, her everything, until cut to 2 years later when my mom and my aunt are flying to Virginia to save grandma and bring her back home. And yeah, that's the most, I wrote the script like 5 years ago and now it's come to fruition, but I love me directing it now because I think I'm mature enough to do it.
I think it sounds like such an intriguing feature. Let me ask you this, as far as when you were collecting facts about for the story, what was it? Was it mostly through your mother's and your aunt's account?
my mother, my aunt, and a diary that my grandmother wrote and got to my hand after I visited the cult in Virginia. And the woman was, she trusted me and she gave me my grandmother diary. And I interviews ex-cult members that got out of the cult and a doctor in Virginia. And I did a mini documentary just to do research for on all of it.
Guy Nativ.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Crew Call podcast on Deadline. Make sure you subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss an episode.